Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions. This episode is brought to you by our Patreon supporters. Become a patron today at patreon.com/intotheportal. In 1943, the U.S. and its allies were grappling with the terrors lurking beneath them. German U-boats, that for some time had been capable of outmaneuvering the existing class of Navy destroyer vessels. Of course, new, more quick-turning ships were employed as the war went on. As new technologies were researched, new ideas came forth, some more strange than others. And top-secret programs began to silently take off. And from there, legends were born. The World War II era has become notorious for mysterious experiments and stories, particularly Nazi experiments involving weapons research and theoretical ideas bridging into strange and esoteric realms. However, at the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard, October of 1943, a different military legend was born, as the Allies, too, had their share of clandestine conspiracies surrounding military and scientific aims. One of the most prolific conspiracies that has lasted for decades, and is riddled with bizarre questions, despite the madness of the alleged events. Join us on Into the Portal for part two, as we attempt to tie some loose ends and speculate on the bizarre claims and ideas of the Philadelphia experiment.
Hello, I'm Amber A.
And I'm Andrew McKay.
And welcome back into the portal.
Your gateway to the bizarre.
Yeah, we are jumping into the conclusion, hey, of our two-part Philadelphia experiment extravaganza.
I love how you said that with like a RuPaul kind of like inflection on the extravaganza.
Philadelphia experiment eleganza extravaganza.
There you go. I guess you could call it that. It is pretty fantastical. This is one of the weirdest, I mean, definitely the most conspiracy theory angled cases I think we've really covered on Into the Portal. Mm-hmm. And like you were just saying before we clicked record here, Amber, for all of our listeners here tuning in today, if you haven't, obviously go back and check out part one where we really break down, you know, the first part of the story, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we're going to kick things off by doing a quick recap. And then there's a couple of minor inconsistencies, you might want to call them. Nothing major. I just wanted to mention a couple of other things off the top as well. But did you want to do a quick little fun recap of what we talked about in part one first?
Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and do that, because we had a lot of information, a lot of different, how would you phrase it? Not variations or versions, but just a lot of ambiguity, I would say, surrounding the facts, the opinions, the conspiracy elements, I guess you could say.
Definitely.
But we're, okay, so the legend itself, maybe that's just the first thing to start off with here.
Sure.
So, again, we had a couple main players, this guy named Carlos Allende.
Right.
/ Carl Allen, and he was the, sort of the origin point for this legend.
Right.
that revolved around a very, very top secret experiment that took place in the Philadelphia shipyards one day during the war of the World War II.
The War of 1812. Wrong. Yeah, that's exactly how that sounded like it was going. But yeah, no, you're right. I mean, he was kind of
the sea was angry that day.
The sea was angry that day, my friends. Yeah, he was the linchpin, though. He was kind of the well. I mean, he's the obviously who got Jessup all jazzed up, jazzy mm-hmm. Jessup, because, you know.
Yeah. Exactly. Do you want to clarify who we're talking about there?
Of course.
Morris K. Jessup.
Exactly. Morris K. Jessup, who was, you know, who he's known now as, you know, like a UFO author. He was other things and did have other formal training that we mentioned in part one. But, I mean, before we even continue on here, like, that to me is what's interesting, right? Because it's the time where UFOs are kind of just coming into the fold. It's really not a good idea to be talking about them. You've got characters that are starting to talk about them, and they're kind of silenced.
You have a lot of, like, you don't want to be a black sheep at this time. You know, if you're on the fringes of anything, it's just not a good place to be.
No.
Like, you know, you want to be close to the center.
And that's the interest here, because obviously the Navy ended up being interested in Jessup. Association with this because they were maybe interested in UFOs and other things that they weren't letting on to and happened to be interested. And that's kind of one of the tie-ins to why this is so weird that we talk about in part one as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So was there anything else you wanted to touch on as far as, like, we had a few other people too, like Robert Gorman. He played into uncovering Carlos's real identity as Carl Allen.
Right.
And we had the two agents that were occupied by the ONR, the Office of Naval Research, mm-hmm. who ended up doing the replication of Morris's book, and then also was the one that conducted this mini investigation. And that was interesting on that History's Mysteries documentary we watched on this topic, where they discussed that and how, like you just mentioned, Andrew, the Navy was kind of at odds, like butting heads a little bit, with the other departments of
with the Air Force specifically.
Exactly. Yeah. The Air Force. That comes up again. I think we even touched on that in the Idaho Falls episode. Like, you know, there's these competing aims of all these departmental research groups, and then obviously the funding that goes along with this. It's very political. So there wasn't a lot of information sharing, which again led to, like, people just conducting their own experiments and their own research, and that's why these two officers of the ONR decided to go the way that they did. And now they've kind of receded into the bushes. They pulled a Homer, so to speak. And we did have their names actually pulled from there. I don't have it in front of me right now, but
it's somewhere down further down in the doc here, I think. We'll
get to it. We did make an effort to just sift through that and pull those names up. But it was interesting because the ONR claims to not have any record of these copies that were made back in the day, and it's just kind of mysterious in that regard. So it does lend itself to a little bit of conspiracy leanings.
Right. Which is obviously where we're getting into today, like the picking up from where all that left off. And of course, you know, we're not going to redo the whole gruesome story because we did that in part one, but where we're essentially left off with is the experiment happens, allegedly. There's a horrific outcome from it, and you've got men fused to the ship, other things happening offshore, people vanishing, other people that just vanished outright from the onset and never came back, potentially. And of course, these are the themes that got played up in the films, subsequent films that were made that we ended up watching and actually really enjoyed.
Yeah, it was good.
The 80s one. And we might talk about that a little bit too, but that's the quick recap. I think I'm ready to kick things off by getting back into where we picked up here, like the end of the experiment itself and some of the inconsistencies I wanted to mention. So one of them, not a major one, but I think we got caught up in the idea that Carlos Allende, aka Carl Allen, who we know now, right, was potentially like on a Navy ship, or like was actually, because we got, because there was that image that we saw, right? Like where it was him, it was his photo. He had the number that was like a record of him being like a sailor. A seaman, if you will. Is this restaurant seaman friendly? but it was a merchant ship, right? And it was supposed to be associated with the experiment, but it was a merchant ship, not a Navy ship. Mm-hmm. So we did mention at the time, like obviously World War II, merchant ships were played a massive part in the war. They were being escorted by destroyers and Navy vessels, but they weren't then in and of themselves Navy vessels. No,
it was interesting. Yeah, because like when we went back to that documentary again, because they had an actual screenshot of the certificate itself.
Exactly.
And then it said, all it says on it is Certificate of Service to Able Seaman.
Right.
And then it also has New York printed on it. And so this was the actual certificate that we discussed in the first part of this little series here. where we were trying to like suss out how they identified the real Alan, right? And we were kind of confused about that. So that was Robert Gorman's effort.
Yes.
And he was the one that ended up putting two and two together and actually tracking down this Alan. And so yeah, that certificate with that number, it was not a Navy ID number. So we wanted to crack that.
Yes.
It was just a seaman ID number.
But of course, obviously, like the play on the story is that the ship was still involved in the experiment, the Fairseth allegedly, right? And that maybe somehow he knew someone that was on the ship if he wasn't on it himself, right? Like that's where it gets all kind of murky and crazy, right? So we know that Alan was, if at all, on a merchant ship, not a Navy ship, and that this obviously doesn't really lend to him being a more credible source for the story as a whole. But you know, what do I mean by this? I mean that I think that maybe there's some other things going on here, right? Like, was there someone else? Did he take someone else's account and just evolve it and play on it? And that's actually what they brought up in the documentary, The History's Mysteries. I think Gorman's the one who mentioned it. He's like, "What is there just a snippet of truth in here amongst all the what seems crazy amongst the margins as like a metaphor, right? Because obviously Jessup's book was filled with a lot of stuff.
Was he perhaps the vehicle, the patsy, so to speak, through which this information was perhaps relayed through a third party who may or may not have this actual information? And then it's sifted through the crazy, which again, this is all just lending itself to a very conspiratorial type angle of conversation. Right. But yeah, that was an interesting point there.
Yeah.
And okay, you had more to say though.
Well, I was just going to continue on to sort of like, I mean, I guess, what's the word? Not justifying things isn't the right word, but just to kind of build off of like what was happening in the war and like the need for like the idea of the Fereseth being a merchant ship, but they were being escorted by destroyers and stuff. The early destroyers, they didn't have the maneuverability to compete with the German U-boats at the time. They were just too slow. They couldn't turn fast enough. So that's why they needed to develop these new class of like destroyer escort ships, which the Eldridge would have been.
Yes.
The USS Eldridge, which is of course the alleged ship involved in this experiment that vanished and materialized and dematerialized, right? Everyone, so listen to part one.
Philadelphia.
But it's still not enough though. And I think that's the point of this story and the belief and the research, right? Because even though these new class of destroyers like had the maneuverability, it's like these really advanced German U-boats, like they're freaking underwater, man. So you and I were talking about this off air before. It's like, yeah, this is all crazy, but we're going to get into some ideas of like photon teleportation later and stuff like that. And that's ongoing research now. And to just think, it's like, man, if you had even someone plant that seed in your brain that maybe that was a possibility, you'd probably get some people on and be like, yeah, if we could teleport even equipment, forget organic matter, forget people. But if you could teleport a ship from here to there, you don't have to worry about the German U-boats anymore. Right? Which would be pretty amazing.
Well, you don't have to worry about ships at all because you don't need ships to transport anything because you can transport A to B without the ship involved
right,
at all.
But I mean, the ship itself is a destroyer. So you could transport a destroyer to one place and then wreak havoc without having to have the travel time and the dangers in between.
Now we're bleeding into Nazi Bell theories here and all that.
We're getting there. But that's basically what we're dealing with here. This is as the fuel to where this is all coming from. The notion that World War II was this era that was notorious for these mysterious experiments, weird stories, and particularly Nazi experiments involving weapons and extremely bizarre esoteric technology, possibly even alien technology. And what we're dealing with would be the U.S. potentially conducting tests, similar type tests. And that's obviously, so anyway, I guess I'm still recapping here, but I just wanted to clarify what this really is and what we're talking about, because all of this is kind of true stuff, these types of experiments. It's just the conspiracy story. It's crazy.
And can we touch on something else? If we're going into inconsistencies and things that just didn't really add up as far as the original story and everything, when we went and did some more review of everything and all of our sources, we rewatched some documentaries and all that kind of thing, especially that History's Mysteries ones, that was really intriguing to me. And it was interesting because this is where we have a big question mark here surrounding the validity of any of this, right? Because the big aspect of this story is the fact that it was relayed that it had not just disappeared, but had teleported to Norfolk.
Yes.
And then back. So the big question is, who the hell was in Norfolk?
How did we know?
Because, well, exactly, right? Who the hell was there? We have no record of any witness being there to see it. The only thing that we have is Alan's statements. And he supposedly, in his own narrative, places himself in the Philadelphia shipyard.
Yeah.
And because he says he sees the ship turning green and disappearing in this, like, greenish fog.
Yeah.
And he could feel it.
Right.
And that's what he said, right? So clearly this dude was not in Norfolk. So that's a big question that we have to address, I think.
Unless No, I mean, I'm picturing obviously like in sci-fi and stuff when it's like a portal opens, maybe it's like you can see through it and somehow it's like, oh, there's Norfolk there, but he's actually still in Philly. But that didn't happen.
That's not described at all. Exactly. You're like describing dark.
Yeah, or basically many other iterations of like time travel or interdimensionality or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's definitely bizarre, and obviously we can come back to that. But tying it back into real stuff, I guess. It's like, that's what the conspiracy theorists all tried to do, right? And we're not really doing that here. Again, for if there's anyone new that's listening to Into the Portal right now, like, we don't typically cover these types of things. And like right now, I think you can tell by the way we're talking about it, how we're leaning. There's definitely so many things that are real that are included in this. And that is, and part of that is the research that was conducted by Albert Einstein and possibly Tesla, you know, working with the Navy right at the time of the alleged event. I don't know where he was actually stationed, but specifically he was working on underwater mine technology and torpedo technology to try to catch up to the Germans. But of course, what makes this so interesting is the idea that we know Einstein was researching other much more vast theoretical ideas. The question is, you know, would any of this be like, you know, I picture a general being like, wait a second, like just picking one line out of a theoretical idea and being like, make this happen. You know what I mean? And wait a second, it's just a theory. It's just quantum theory. It's like every movie I've ever seen with that happening. But, you know, obviously he was working on things that led to the atomic bomb. And obviously earlier before the war, he essentially had published a paper that was a counterexample, as it's described, to many of the theories and ideas surrounding quantum mechanics. So this is what sparked this idea of quantum teleportation for people. Mm. And that's where the unified field theory is slapped onto this Philadelphia experiment as like the origins for the experiment itself. And using these, extremely powerful electromagnets to manipulate light and manipulate the forces of nature around us, basically.
The electromagnetic fields and thus the visibility or invisibility of certain rays. And
so this relationship between that essentially could bend and shape and open like space and time.
The theoretical idea.
Right. So
And that's where we get back into Allende or Allen, where he actually claimed in his many, I believe it was close to 50 letters he ended up sending to Morris K. Jessup by describing and actually belittling Jessup to a large degree, too. I was reading a little bit more into that, how he was very much like propping himself up, Allen was.
Sure.
And how he claimed that, he was actually taught by Einstein himself. Wow, that's quite the claim. And that he could prove the unified field theory based on the events that he had witnessed on board the USS Andrew Fariseth on that day.
I think it would have just been the SS then, rather than the USS.
What?
I don't know. Does the USS imply, I don't know, I guess it doesn't imply Navy, like it's in the Navy. SS versus USS.
Oh, I have
scratch
no idea.
That. I don't know. One of our listeners would definitely know, and you guys can hit us up about that.
Idea.
Random thought off the top of my head. Please continue, Amber.
Yeah, well, that was kind of all I had to say there. It was just that he was claiming that, apparently this unified field theory, which has never been proven, as many, many sources will tell you,
right?
That he had allegedly witnessed this be proven on this day. So he's just a simple seaman, not even a part of the Navy or anything like that, claims to have been taught by Einstein. So again, this is very much discrediting any sort of credibility that Allen's lending to this, which if you want to make the argument that he is a patsy to a certain degree, then you can excuse a large degree of this.
Yeah.
But I won't say that to a certain degree. But, you know,
I have a note to make on that. I have a point, rather.
Yeah.
Because I did read in one other article, actually, I got to find the source for it here, that there was family members who, like, they talked about Carl Allen in a lot of weird ways. We talked about it in part one, where it was like, oh, he was always sending people weird letters, or he was an odd duck.
Yeah.
You know, he was maybe a savant, but like failed high school and like all this kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then there was one other section where I saw where it was basically saying that like he was mostly illiterate. Like he couldn't even necessarily write any of these letters the way they were formulated. It, like some people look at that and basically be like, this is too advanced.
Hmm.
Like his writings would have been much more akin to like a school age boy.
He did have relatively, like his brothers claim that he actually never formally learned how to write.
Yeah.
So that,
well, there you go.
That, yeah, so he would use annotations and he would use other people's books and writings to express his ideas and maybe like change their ideas, like, you know, to suit what he was thinking. And so that would be his annotations.
And I get that to an extent, but it's like, it's still, and I guess maybe that's the kind of weird savant part where he's formulating from that and still making it like, it's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, but still seems like he's the one writing it from scratch, like for Gorman and the people and the ONR reading these weird writings about aliens and how they behave and how they their fuel sources work in the margins of Jessup's books. And I think those are the points that the ONR was so interested in, right? Like if it was just crazy saying, I go and hang out with the reptilians, maybe they wouldn't be so interested. But clearly there's, I mean, obviously we're dealing with so much disclosure stuff right now. But even back then, it's like, this is an open admission that the Navy's interested in UFOs and weird technology. Therefore, they're interested enough to ask Jessup to come in and talk about it because of the mentions of things like fuel sources or other things like that.
It's kind of funny to think that they even opened up that package. The name, like, what did it say? It was like Happy Easter. Yeah, it was like, I feel like that would just be treated as like automatic, like, you know, get the bomb unit in kind of thing.
Also, again, like on that note of Happy Easter, like we speculated on how weird that was in part one. That sounds like I don't even know. That's like weird, like Black Eyed Kids or like Men in Black type, just nonsense. Honestly, like in a weird. Don't you think it's like, is that Allende like being just really strange? Because the rest of what he says is strange, but it's not like that. It's just him trying to claim he knows all this stuff. But then you have this really weird, almost borderline cryptic. Like, what is that? What is the association there? I couldn't really come up with anything.
Honestly, yeah, I'm kind of stumped on that one too.
But anyway, super weird.
The one thing too that I might add to this sort of idea that Alan claiming to have been taught by Einstein himself, what if he really just kind of meant like he had read Einstein's books? You know what I mean? And things like that. Obviously, those are two very different things. Someone like personally relaying information to you and teaching you versus you picking up a book. But if he does have a habit of doing this, right, of just, you know, like getting his hands on whatever he can, and then maybe
that's what
I'm
he meant.
Not sure.
Maybe that
that's
is
just
what he
one
meant.
Thing I will add to that as a possible hypothetical explanation. But I'm not going to give Alan too much credit.
Yeah,
for sure.
Right.
But, you know.
Yeah. Well, I, and neither am I. I'm not giving him credit. I just think that there's maybe some other, like, anyway. You guys all know what I think, based on what I've been saying so far. I don't think the Navy was, like we obviously went through in part one, like they were pretty quick to shoot all of this down.
They were. And again, like the Office of Naval Research, they had their official statement, their official letter on their website there that you can access. And yeah, of course, they call it the official information sheet. And they do go into the idea that, this is a quote from them, says here that this does not, like Einstein's unified field theory, does not conform to known physical laws, nor does the account described by Allen or Allende.
Sure.
And then they go on to claim that, obviously, yeah, like many sources will tell you this, that Einstein's unified field theory was never completed. And that at the time of 1943 to 44, he was a part-time consultant, as it's described, with the Navy Bureau of Ordnance. So again, like ordnance, so like explosives, things like that. And he was undertaking theoretical research on explosives and explosions.
Right. Which we know.
The devices that create the explosion and then the explosion itself. But there is no indication, this is a direct quote from them, there is no indication that Einstein was involved in research relevant to invisibility or to teleportation. So that was their official thing. And then I kind of said, but are they actually correct, or are they just like omitting certain things, or is this simply an official line taken by the department to cover up these top secret technologies and research aims, especially in light of what we were just talking about, right? With all of the rivalries between different departments and things like that, you know, like
who knows? A good question. It's a good question. So obviously we will never really know the answer.
Maybe someone will hundreds of years from now.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, like, this reminds me so much of stuff we mentioned in like our, you know, Strange Mind of Tesla episode. And Tesla does tie into this, like I mentioned, which is interesting, even though he was, you know, really coming down to the end here. Like, he died very soon in and around this. Right. And he was old, and he was prominent in the 20s. You know, he was battling Edison, the AC versus DC. Right. But, you know, yeah, we know from that past episode that he was researching a lot of things that weren't kosher, like weren't cool for a lot of people. Like they were not good for, you know, businesses like General Electric or whatever, right? Like especially the idea of like universal energy and like the wireless grid.
He wasn't on board with the whole commodification capitalist sort of like view of technology.
No, that sort of Eastern European side of him. Because he, what was he again? Serbian?
Oh,
I can't remember exactly. But anyway, you know, yeah, he definitely had some different views that weren't exactly like the American dream of capitalism. That's for sure. And that's why people thought he was silenced, right? And a lot of that research was probably taken away. Very much like the idea of like the cars that run on water, and that could have been a thing long ago, potentially, right?
But and painted in a more negative light, and also maybe associated with a little bit of communism. If you're not a hardcore capitalist, then what are you?
Right. So if there's trillions of dollars at stake, and obviously the military-industrial complex is fueled by trillions, hundreds of billions of dollars every year around the world, like this is something that is going to get silenced and or used. And so that comes up in this crazy ass story of the Philadelphia experiment that potentially there was some work that Tesla had done earlier before his death in the 40s that could have been used to finish out the unified field theory. So, and of course, this is just speculated on many different blogs, and there's no official statements about this at all, obviously, right? There's this one interesting blog, though, I read where they talk about how the movie The Prestige actually makes reference to this very claim. And they show that, how exactly is it shown? It's like, you know, the Tesla coil, obviously, you know, we talked about that in that episode about Tesla. They show it in The Prestige, a large one being used to make things disappear. I don't actually remember that in The Prestige. I have to bring that up again.
I kind of vaguely remember that, but I thought it was more a trick.
Yeah, he says here, it's like, but instead he creates an exact replica, and that replica comes into being a short distance away, like teleportation, right? The dematerial, like very much exactly like the ship, the Eldritch. Yeah. It dematerializes and materializes in Norfolk, but there was nobody there to see it. There was this one guy, and then called everybody up, hey guys, the Eldritch was here in Norfolk. And then Allende was able to write the story.
Like, anyway, where is that missing piece, right?
It also just seems like of all the things that we're talking about, if that's the silver bullet for showing that this is all a hoax, it's like, man, is that a big oversight?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? <It is. laughs> But the idea of Tesla being involved in this comes from an absolutely bizarre source, and a source that would come out at a later date. I don't know if you came across this gentleman in your research, Amber, Al Bielek.
No.
So this was in the 80s. He came out after actually watching the film The Philadelphia Experiment, the 1988 film. So, you know, this is after Jessup and Allende, right? There were so many books, you know, Jessup had already kind of done his thing and tried to make money off of it and yada, 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 right? So this 80s movie comes out, and then we get this guy, Al Bielek, who in his mid-50s at the time watched the movie and then basically said he couldn't shake the feeling that all of this had happened to him before, or he had seen all of this before. So I kind of wrote it in here like a real Fox Mulder, because we know Fox and X-Files loves the regression hypnosis therapy, right?
Yep.
He undergoes a series of these therapies. And in these sessions, can you guess, everybody? Bielek remembers that he had these repressed memories of working on the Montauk Project in the 1970s. For those of you who don't know, that was another clandestine alleged operation, I believe, involving mind control and possibly some other strange things as well. You know, its own series of experiments. But he also got memories back that he was involved in the Philadelphia experiment. And that his name wasn't actually Al Bielek after all, but he was really named Edward Cameron, as he remembered in these things, which is weird too, right?
Huh.
So he's working on the Philadelphia experiment under the name Edward Cameron, along with his brother, who he remembered his name was Duncan Cameron, who at the time would have been in their 20s. So he's watching the 80s movies in his 50s, in his 20s at the time, as a Navy seaman, allegedly.
Yeah.
And man, I mean, is this guy just cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs? Sees a movie and then just claims all this crazy stuff. So he says he remembered that Einstein was directly working on this program of degaussing ships. And I'll tell you what. So degaussing, very strange. And that's what the main theory of like misinformation about this Philadelphia experiment is. He claims that, yeah, he was involved in Einstein's early experiments with this. Degaussing is basically counteracting the ship's magnetic field in order to create such a condition where you can safely go over like mines. That's basically just like making the ship invisible. And it's for specifically for detonation devices. So So it's like it makes the ship invisible in so like that's one of the theories, that maybe there was someone who got this blown out of proportion because all of these crew members were talking about how the ship was becoming invisible, air quoting here, which it kind of was
in a way.
Yeah. So yeah, it was protecting against the magnetic mines planted by the Nazis, and research from Tesla was purportedly used in the same technology, this degaussing technology that was expanded upon and turned into a potential cloaking equipment, like literal physical naked eye cloaking equipment, not radar
like,
cloaking.
Like the Harry
equipment.
Potter cloaking. Like a
they just have a giant tarp, a massive invisibility tarp that they tarp the entire Eldridge with.
But that apparently is in production. Like people are working on that. It's probably a few decades off, but.
And could you imagine if we see that in our lifetime?
Yeah.
How much? Hit us up and tell us what you guys out there listening would pay for an invisibility cloak. That's going to lead to some problems, man.
Yeah.
Like, you think Harry was sneaking around the castle. Can you imagine if some kids got their hands on an invisibility cloak?
Kids, that's the least harmful. Oh, come on, you imagine?
All right, so back to Bielek, though. He claimed that there was this gentleman named Dr. von Neumann who was working on the Manhattan Project along with himself. And after Einstein, I guess, was sort of moved off of the project, obviously this is crazy woo-woo, but this is what he claims. Mm-hmm. It got passed on to this Dr. von Neumann, who took all of this research done by Tesla, Einstein, and succeeded in making ships like cannon-class destroyers able to disappear. Hmm. And the Eldridge being the one that got slapped onto this story, right? Invisible for a very short period of time on the first occasion. And this is according to Bielek.
Yeah.
And this was achievable because of the combination of Tesla's research and Einstein's research, which is interesting. They basically created what he called a zero-time reference generator.
Hmm. Interesting.
Okay. Very sci-fi. So yeah, they were able to manipulate these electromagnetic fields and therefore manipulate the forces of the galaxy.
Okay, so Bielek, so this is interesting. Maybe he was the one in Norfolk. No, I'm just kidding.
Maybe.
But what happened to his brother then? And why would he have a complete change of identity? Was this like a mind-washing thing that the Navy did? Or like Men in Black style, where they just like whip out their little like gun thing and then just wipe your mind?
Yeah, he's just a different person then.
This does remind me of like, you know, like we've heard of false hypnotic memory regression type things where people create all sorts of false memories and things. And it usually is based on imagery that they've seen in pop culture, in movies, in books, even just things that they just straight up imagine themselves. Like it could have come in a dream or it could just be something that's done through suggestibility. But yeah, no, that.
Yeah, well, I've got more to say.
Oh, you got more to say. Whoa, because he's not done.
Well, because one of the things we added to our theories section when we were talking about this, like pre-recording, and obviously in research, was like, is this all just like, I mean, obviously crazy Carl Allende and then just, you know, like from the era, like UFO movies and just like people getting really jazzed up from films. And, you know, like there was a 1933 film starring this guy, Claude Rains, called The Invisible Man, which had a lot of themes that were very similar to a lot of this stuff, right? So that's a decade before this alleged event.
Yeah.
But that's a classic thing people will say, right?
Well, yeah, totally. Like, I even saw references to the idea that Allen was just straight up, he was influenced by The Fly. That was one of his big influences. Because, right, like, that's fusing matter, and it is teleportation to a certain degree,
When did
The
Fly come out, though?
I think it was 1950s.
No.
Yeah,
like, the original?
The original Fly.
Oh, okay, right.
In the 50s,
not the one with with Sexy Boy. Oh, what's his name?
Goldberg.
Goldblum. The Bloomer.
Yeah, the Bloomy.
Right, okay, right.
No, not that one. But, yeah, no, they were saying that there was one other one, too, that they referenced. I can't remember it now off the top of my head.
I'm glad you brought up The Fly, because that actually works in a second here to talk about teleportation and sort of the idea of that even being possible.
Mm-hmm.
But a bit, but just to come back to Bielek here, it's like, is this idea of like, is this just a crazy guy who's like watched this 80s movie and is now jumped onto this? It's like, man, what is wrong with people if that's the case? It's like, do you really think you're going to get famous from this? Like, that's weird. Like, that's different than trying to commercialize it, right?
That's a little ambiguous to me too, because what if he truly does believe it? You know what I mean? Like,
right. And of course, like, and I dug into this a little bit, but it's like, there's the Navy's going to deny his record with the Eldridge. And, like, the crew of the Eldridge, like, there's statements from dozens of them being, like, nowhere near Philadelphia that day was, right? We've got the records from the ONR and from the Navy you know,
the captain himself.
Yeah, the captain himself, and just like, and just their records, like just the archives being like, they were here, then they were here, then they were here. These are all things that are easily changed, of course. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, but I have to mention this because, you know, again, there's always something. There's always one juicy nugget that really, really discredits some of these characters. And both this Bilek or Duncan, if whatever you want to call him, would go on later to evolve this idea of being involved in these time travel or interdimensional experiments and claim that he actually traveled to Mars on several occasions and that he remembers other trips that he took with research teams back to a research station in 100,000 BCE, as well as other planets to get canisters filled with light and dark energy. Now,
that's interesting there. That changes things.
Now, could you? I don't really know where to go from that, because obviously that's far beyond like Bob Lazar type stuff. You know what I'm saying? That's a little bit beyond
It's in
that.
The same sort of category, but just a different part of the spectrum.
Right. But then the question, but then very much like, you know, Ryan Sprague from Somewhere in the Skies brings this up all the time, where it's like the idea, or not all the time, but lots of people bring this up, this idea of like through these different eras, there's different versions of like misinformation that are put out there, right? And the more fantastical a genre, if you will, or a topic or whatever research topic seems, then the public's going to care less. And like, that's what's happened with UFOs, right? That's what's happened with like a lot of like paranormal stuff potentially. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is like,
yeah,
I don't know, like for the people who would say, maybe this guy really was on a Navy ship. It's like, yeah, did someone get to him? It's the Men in Black brainwashing thing. It's making it so crazy that even if there is one nugget of truth amongst the basket of 1,000 crazy nuggets, no one's ever going to find that nugget of truth
because it's so diluted.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The truth becomes diluted. And that's what we end up with, is just madness.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to be heading into some final theories, explanations, and trying to really answer a couple of these questions, such as, like, what was the deal with the murder of Morris Jessup?
Or
was it a suicide? And who the hell was Manson Valentine in that regard? Because that's really interesting to me. Amber already kind of mentioned the one that we don't really have a way of following up on, but like the Norfolk angle, the Norfolk end of the dematerialization. Like where the hell was that? Like what?
The record of the Eldridge as well. We've got a lot to touch on.
We've got a lot to touch on. But first, we are going to take a quick promo break.
Do you find yourself suffering from negative thoughts or feelings that are getting in the way of your personal happiness and achieving your life goals? If so, perhaps it's time you check out BetterHelp online counseling services. BetterHelp.com is there for you with licensed professionals that are specially matched to you and are available worldwide and remotely, all in a safe and private online environment. Seeking help and finding the right person to talk to should be easy, and that's exactly what BetterHelp.com has done. You can begin communicating with a licensed professional in 24 hours, all through your preferred methods of communicating, including secure video or phone sessions, plus online chat and text with your therapist. You can trust that anything you share with your therapist remains completely confidential. And if you feel the need, you can change counselors at any time for no additional cost. BetterHelp has licensed professionals who are specialized in everything from depression, anxiety, family conflicts, and many other areas that may not be available locally. Best of all, it's truly affordable. Into the Portal listeners get 10% off your first month with discount code PORTAL. Spelled P-O-R-T-A-L. So why not get started today? Join over 1 million other individuals and go to betterhelp.com/portal. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor that can make a difference in your life. That's betterhelp.com/portal.
And we're back. So yeah, make sure to go check out betterhelp.com and use our promo code if that's something you think you might want to check out.
Mm-hmm.
Also, before we jump right back into things here, everybody, we have a pretty sizable announcement, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Really excited to welcome and just so thankful to a brand new producer on Patreon.
Yeah.
Just joining the fold of an amazing crew that we have on there with our production team.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson Greenberg, man, thank you so, so much. It's just awesome.
we're just so thrilled to have you along for this crazy ride. It's so much fun.
And hell yeah.
Yeah, we're just really, really honored. And we did have another crew member join us, a paranormal scholar.
Indeed.
Enid V. So thank you so much, Enid. And we really appreciate the support from everyone over in our Patreon community.
Absolutely.
We're really stoked because we do have...
We've got an episode researched, locked and loaded, pretty much almost ready to go.
Took the words out of my mouth.
Yes, and we appreciate everyone's patience. Like, and I feel like we say this to everyone, like patrons and regular, you know, all of our listeners out there in general, a lot. But it's been a crazy year and a half, like for everybody. But, you know, like we're super busy with a lot of
career
things,
changes.
Right? Career changes, coming back into some level of normalcy with work and stuff like that. We're getting married in like a month and a half and we're trying to really dial that in. And it's like really stressful.
There's been so many ups and downs and changes and you just have to roll with it. And we're just,
So there may be some interruptions to your regular scheduled programming here on Into the Portal. But stay tuned for that. We'll update you guys because we may need to take some time to kind of wrap up a few of these things. But we just wanted to sort of plant that seed with you because we're not going anywhere. ITP is still cooking for the rest of this year. And we're really excited to have these new patrons join us. Thank you so much again, Jackson and Anid. And I think I'm ready to get back into our final theories, explanations, and definitely touching on some of these weird ass questions. And let's just start with the murder of Morris K. Jessup and or his suicide, because that's a weird one. And that's where we ended off part one.
Okay, so let's do a quick recap here. So history tells it, on April 19th of 1959, Morris Jessup contacted his associate, Manson Valentine, who, I will say, is a very mysterious figure. We don't really know too much or anything about him.
No.
I've come across a couple of versions of the name, ranging from, like, Charles Manson's son to a guy that discovered Bimini Road off of, I think it was the Bahamas. It was, like, this really cool ancient road underneath the sea.
Yeah.
So this Manson Valentine largely... At large, I would say. So essentially what happened was Jessup contacted this Valentine character to arrange a meeting claiming to have made breakthroughs on the research regarding the Philadelphia experiment. Next day, April 20th, 1959, Jessup is found dead in Dade County, Florida. He was actually discovered unconscious and unresponsive with an exhaust pipe dragged back into his vehicle, essentially suffocating him.
Yes.
The death was ruled a suicide. However, there are some people that will point to some more mysterious and perhaps murderous. And this in particular kind of lends itself to the conspiracy. The fact that he was supposed to meet with him that day.
Yeah.
And then this happens. So we have a lot to touch on here, I think, because even his daughter, she was on the History's Mysteries documentary. And initially she was kind of the mind, like it was a bit more ambiguous, but then she recalled in what they told as like a candid moment in her interview where she said to her stepmom, who called her to give her the news, that she asked how he did it.
Yeah, that was her first response.
Yeah, so she interpreted that years later upon recalling that statement. She thought that pointed to the idea that she thought he was in a suicidal state of mind.
Right.
But you had some interesting points too, Andrew. Like, why would he be pursuing this research if he was so depressed? Like, what is this his sole motive in life? Obviously, he had a divorce recently.
Right.
So that plays into it for a lot of people.
Yeah, there's a handful of things. It's just a lot of it that is so strange, right? Like, so he did this. He was found in a park, like in an open space, which is another really weird thing, right? It's like, is he doing it to make a point? And if so, what is exactly the message for that? Like, if it's just for because you're going through a divorce, like, isn't it more impactful for... maybe your soon-to-be ex-wife to find you at home or something, right? Or like, you wouldn't think you'd make it that public. I mean, that's not typical at all for those types of suicides.
No, it doesn't seem typical. Unless this Dade County Park was, like, in the bush, you know what I mean?
Right, which I guess we didn't technically Google map that.
The only thing I will say that, again, this painted a picture from the documentary we watched where they had the reenacted scene where it looked like, obviously, like, you can't get that far into the bush with a car, like a sedan, like he would have had. So it was, like, in a parking lot out in the open was kind of how it looked, but who knows what the actual park looked like. Maybe it was a little more private.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And with that being out in the open, I guess, you know, for us here today, it's like, is the question, you know, is it a message for someone that we just don't know? And that's why it's out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
Right. if it's
like
a,
from Jessup, you mean, or from someone who allegedly might have offed him?
Either or, potentially, even. Mm. Like, maybe Jessup was trying, maybe it was suicide, but maybe it was suicide because he knew someone was after him. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, if it was murder, it definitely seems like he was left out in the open to send a message.
Yeah.
Potentially.
I know. And, like, we're not claiming to be experts on what people do when they're in a suicidal state of mind.
No.
But, like, it does seem kind of weird.
And then, obviously, the fact that this Valentine character was contacted just the day before tells him that he has this research in hand that was really going to, you know, and maybe it isn't really, like, you know, justifying Allende or Allen, but it was another angle of, like, maybe something the ONR knew, and that's why they were so interested in his book and these weird-ass writings in the margins.
Maybe he touched something. Right? Or, like, we've been kind of suggesting, I guess, throughout this series, the idea that he could have been a conduit through which someone else, and another unknown agent, was acting through.
Yeah, and is Valentine that character? Is he an agent for some clandestine operation that's sort of like half like monitoring the progress of Jessup's research, even like slash just like keeping checks and balances on the characters involved in this crazy saga, because maybe there is this one line of truth like linking back to the Navy or something?
It's like the guy, I'm sorry, I'm just referencing X-Files again, but it is like, what's his name? Deep Throat.
Yeah.
Where he's like this guy that's the shadowy character that's feeding him information. Is it information? Is it misinformation? Are you a pawn in a larger game? Are you, like, you know what I mean? Do you have agency? Are you making the right moves? Like, it's very Mulder-esque.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So then moving along from Valentine into this whole question of the witness present in Norfolk.
Right.
How do we know? Is there any evidence? There's none. There's literally none.
There was even one weird ass article. There's one that I found where it's literally like just twisted and turned this whole story around, that they made it sound as if Alan was in Norfolk and saw the materialization and not the demon materialization.
This is where the story's, you're exactly right. It's been so twisted and turned around and so many different analyses applied to it that it's just like, ugh. But so let's just get into, like, the USS Eldridge itself, right? And the whole, where the hell was the ship during these times? Like, we actually do have the official war diary from the Naval History and Heritage Command Library. And I won't read it all as follows, but basically here, it starts off September 18th. Ship is in the vicinity of Bermuda.
Right.
It's undergoing training. There's sea trials. This takes place up until the 15th of October, where the Eldridge is said to have left in a convoy for New York.
Okay.
And so this convoy entered into, it was like a 3-day thing. So we're up to the date of October 18th.
Right.
And apparently, the Eldridge stayed in the New York Harbor until November 1st. And then that's when it became part of an escort for a convoy by the name of UGS 23, which was a New York section.
And that's through the dates that we're working with here then.
Mm-hmm.
So it was close to Philadelphia.
Exactly. So they do end this statement saying, but it was in New York. It wasn't in Philadelphia.
Sure.
They ended by saying that Eldridge remained in New York on availability training and in Block Island Sound until the 31st of December, when it steamed to Norfolk with four other ships. During this time frame, this is a direct quote here, the Eldridge was never in Philadelphia. So there's no evidence to support that. And this is official records. So again, right, this is the era of paper. So you can doctor these things. But I'm not saying they did. I'm just saying, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, this reminds me, too, of some of those statements from the crew of the Eldridge, who basically said that they were with it from the beginning to the end, not just from its launch, but literally its construction. And so not only can they speak to where it was, like, at these dates, but there were some that were, you know, could really speak to this idea of, like, no, there couldn't have even been a skeleton crew on, like, a different day or something like that, because all, like, the some of the men involved were literally involved in building the ship itself and stayed with it the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way for that to be a potential thing would be for, I don't even know, mind control or another ship involved, and the name was changed to make it seem like it was the Eldridge.
It was a swaparoo.
A swaparoony. It could, I mean, I have a statement on that in a second, but please continue with the
information. This is interesting, because this little sheet that was provided by the ONR is very thorough. It goes into the whole story, kind of lays it all out according to Alan's claims, and then it goes into their thoughts on where this could have originated from, this whole conspiracy and this Philadelphia experiment legend. And so this is a quote from him here. It says here, "The personnel at the 4th Naval District believe that the questions surrounding the so-called Philadelphia experiment arise from quite routine research which occurred during World War II at the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard. Until recently, it was believed that the foundation for the apocryphal stories arose from degaussing experiments." So again, we got the degaussing here. "Which have the effect of making a ship undetectable or invisible to magnetic mines," as you already explained,
right.
Andrew.
Yeah.
So this is their sort of, yeah. But they also go on to say that another likely genesis of the bizarre stories about levitation, teleportation, and effects on human crew members may be attributed to experiments with the generating plant of a destroyer, the USS Timmerman. In the 1950s, this ship was part of an experiment to test the effects of small high-frequency generators providing 1,000 hertz instead of the standard 400 hertz.
Right, okay.
This higher-frequency generator produced corona discharges, as well as other known phenomena associated with high-frequency generators. However, none of the crew suffered effects from the experiments.
They were not fused to the ship from these experiments.
No, there was no absurd sort of, like, you know, like... Yeah.
No. But and that's really interesting. It's like, but it's so cool that those are actual things that were happening. Like this degaussing equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way you describe it, it can sound mundane to some, but I think, like, you know, it's really not that far of a leap and a jump to read as these are described, the massive electromagnetic, you know, devices being used for this degaussing experiments and technology, and then potentially some ideas and motivation that's coming from Einstein's unified field theory and just other ideas on potential teleportation and where those ideas came from. And that's what's coming into this next little section here, because, you know, very much like sort of, you know, the Bob Lazar type story and element 115. And like, where does any of this actually come from? Maybe it wasn't from Einstein. Maybe it's not building off Einstein's theory. Maybe it's from found technology. And it's sort of a melding of these different things. Isn't a degaussing series of experiments happening in Philadelphia the perfect cover for experimenting on other things involving electromagnets? I mean, come on, people. It's like, kind of 1 + 1 = 2 to me. I mean, it's the perfect place.
Just how far did they go?
Exactly. Exactly. And then again, coming back to what you were talking about before with like the little evidence in Norfolk, it's like, you know, the original story for Philadelphia is that there was like hundreds of people that should have seen. It's not like they're posted up in their lawn chairs like watching it.
Yeah.
Like a fireworks
display.
They're
present in the area.
But they're technically present in the area. So you'd think, I mean,
actually in itself would be a hilarious experiment, to actually have the experiment be about watching the people who are going about their day-to-day lives. How many people actually notice a full naval ship disappear or just like a merchant ship disappear?
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Where it's like almost like where you're not looking at it and then you just, you know what I mean? You should have horse blinders. A lot of people do.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, the same argument goes for a lot of like UFO sightings.
The only, just to build off this though, the idea of like, oh, who could have seen it in Norfolk? In the movie like that we watched, which we don't really, we can do a Film Friday on it if people want that, hit us up, let us know. But obviously, and in the story too, there were some men that just vanished. Like some refused to the ship, some are just outright gone. Some later have this weird effect of like their cells being affected, so they just dematerialize, like they disappear. Like people are watching
and
them disappear.
And they travel in time to the future.
Potentially, right? So that's one explanation for the no witnesses in Norfolk. And then the story basically being like the survivors were the ones who said that they thought they were in Norfolk, and potentially their materialization wasn't simultaneous in time. So they dematerialized from Philadelphia in 1943, October. They briefly materialized in Norfolk, Virginia, maybe not in 1943, maybe in a slightly different time period.
I like that.
Less witnesses there or whatever, right? And then they rematerialize because it's not just black and white, right? Like
It's nonlinear.
Yeah. It could be exactly. It could be completely, That's interesting. That's sort of another weird way of thinking about it.
That's kind of dumb that I didn't think about that. It was like, oh yeah, like clearly, yeah, these men that refused the ship. Like, but how would they have known that they're in Norfolk unless they see like a sign that says, you are in Norfolk? Like,
you know what I mean? 10 minutes to Norfolk.
Or they just knew it because they've been there before maybe. But you know, that's stretch. But,
yeah, know, there's like some weird time travel wizard at the end of the portal saying, you're in Norfolk right now.
But the other part of it, too, is like, even if that happened, how would Alan have been talking to these people?
Very true.
He was on a different ship.
Very true. So I, okay.
And he's on the Navy. So many problems.
I know. There's a lot of problems with it. But obviously, this brings up the question of like, could these experiments, if they were actually being conducted, could they be based on found technology? Mm-hmm. It's a combination of maybe building off Einstein's ideas, but this brings me to a section that, you know, it deserves its own episode. We are going to dedicate an entire own episode to the Nazi Bell because it is utterly fascinating and the accounts of it are crazy. But I wanted to bring it up in this episode because it is on a simultaneous timeline and the technology, the purported technology might be the same. The Bell was considered this achievement of Nazi scientists who potentially reverse engineered something. Mm-hmm. And we know that the U.S. and allied forces were in this position of sending like reconnaissance teams. They were trying to steal information, right? Like Project Paperclip was one of the designations for this. Right? Mm-hmm. And I think we've mentioned that on some other shows before too. And this program actually secured like V2 missiles, information from figures like Werner von Braun and like these, you know, in this like really important stuff for the Second World War. But the Bell, or Die Glock, as it's in German, was reportedly one such technology or Wunderwaffe, as it was called. And like I said off the top of the show, it's like this is what the Second World War was kind of like all about, like, you know, espionage for one, and also this like race for technology. Having this crazy technology to win the war. And if anyone was going to initiate some research in something that's maybe like alien technology recovered to time travel or levitate objects or what have you, it's going to be Adolf Hitler and that weird ass team. I mean, come on.
The Nazi occultists.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Right? They were interested in the weirdest stuff. Mm-hmm. They definitely would have been looking at
this. They didn't discount anything mysticism related or anything that was just woo-woo outside of the box. Like, yeah, that actually is a really good point to make, Andrew. It's just the idea of like, we are just on the cusp of the nuclear era, and there are so many possibilities and just like imaginations running wild with, and can you imagine with these departments of defense, like all these contracts, all these experimental aims and things like that. Yeah, it's totally believable.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so my question with this is, without getting into crazy details on the Bell, it's called the Bell because that was its general shape, like the shape of a giant bell, which is actually ironic here because in Philadelphia, there's the giant bell with crack in it, right? There's the tie-in, everybody. And then Nicolas Cage is going to fly out and find a treasure somewhere. No, but seriously though, like that's what the general shape of this bell was described. And it was thought to be some sort of a device that was either for teleportation, which again, the Germans, if you could teleport your weapons, move troops, like whatever, move stuff around without the time, you're going to win the war. Or potentially some form of levitation, like could have been a device used to create like fighter UFOs for the Germans or something like this, right? And the question is, could the Americans have either stolen the same technology, like come across it through reconnaissance, or did they recover some of their very own and were attempting to use Nazi scientists, which they definitely did, like we know after the war, like, hey, everybody that we're not going to put on trial, come over here and build our stuff. Like that's what they did.
Exactly.
And there was, this is where I'm crossing over into a million different things and they all deserve their own episode, everybody. But the Ketchburg incident was another UFO incident in the US where the craft itself resembled like the Nazi Bell. Mm-hmm. And so there's this tie in here that potentially there was like recovery of that technology potentially multiple times over throughout history and attempts to reverse engineer it. There's the Bell story on that side of the pond and maybe the Philadelphia experiment, along with other various stories where they're trying to use this reverse engineer technology. The timelines work out. Maybe the Bell is involved in this somehow. Potentially.
Perhaps.
Or just this weird type of research. I had to mention it because it's like the Germans were looking into the same type of stuff. They it was were. A race, just like the space race was later on with the Russians, right? It was the same.
Oh, this is all kind of, yeah, like, I feel like when we, way back in the day, listening to the series from Astonishing Legends on the Nazi Bell.
Yes.
And the idea, I think they went into the whole line of thought where it was, yeah, exactly like how you're describing, like, the idea that the Germans were after, like, this super machine that could literally transport anything anywhere in the world right. instantly. Whether that's troops, whether it's tanks, whether it's, yeah, aircraft or just ships.
Whatever.
Anything. You can win the war instantly. You can be wherever you want instantly.
Yeah.
That is huge.
And if there's an additional component of time travel to it, well, not only can you teleport in real time, but if you mess something up, then you can Scooty Puff Jr. back a couple of days and redo the thing that you just screwed up.
Exactly.
Like, in theory.
Well, that's exactly where the Philadelphia Experiment movie part two goes. Because allegedly, yeah. it, like, picks up, I don't know if it's supposed to be the same characters as the original movie from the 80s, mm-hmm. but, like, I think it was early 2000s this came out, and he has to, like, the plot is he goes back to World War II to stop the Nazis from winning the war because there's some weird loophole thing that happens, and then la la la, and mm-hmm. he has to fix the right that was wrong right. and all that kind of thing.
Right.
But yeah, no, it's, yeah, that's
I had to mention that. The other thing I do want to mention too, before I forget, because this is the only section here where I included this, and again, like, it's its own episode. It needs its own episode, so I'm not going to go into electronic fog. I'm just mentioning all these heavy hitters here. Ketchberg, Nazi Bell, electronic fog.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought of it during this because of the description of, like, the green mist, right? And how yeah. he, like, you know, in the story, suck his arm out and could feel the energy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you guys have listened to Astonishing Legends or other podcasts or researched electronic fog, it's kind of a similar described thing. And then, like, there's time travel components, there's teleportation components that come yep. into it, but it's from what is from all by all accounts a natural phenomena of the earth, right?
Yeah.
So what I'm looking at this as is, like, maybe this was one big fat accident, like, it, you know what I mean, like, if they're doing degaussing experiments or whatever,
yeah.
maybe that potential manipulation, it's like the perfect concoction, like, wrong place, wrong time. Where there's sort of, like, maybe some sort of a natural force involved in this, because electronic fog, a lot of the stories, it's not military experiments involved. It's just, like, planes flying in one place and 10 minutes later spitting out somewhere that would take them 10 hours to get to.
Well, I don't think it was that exaggerated, but yeah, it was, like,
something
several
along
hours.
Those lines.
It was a few hours that sure. he had traveled in the
and that's
span
just,
of 30
And that's
minutes.
Just one story of it too, right? But, like, the notion of electronic fog, it's just sort of similar. It just kind of, like, made me think of, like, yeah, the green mist, the feel of the energy. Maybe there's some experiments into manipulating the Earth's natural forces. Mm-hmm. Was the USS Eldridge right on some ley lines? What else can I tack on to here for everybody?
I don't know.
No, I'm kidding. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's a whole lot of crazy, but that is very interesting. Yeah, what else do we want to get into here? Like, we had some notes on the Montauk project as well. This is something that, again, is kind of funny because it is described as an extension of the Philadelphia Experiment
right.
by the authors. So this was, like, a series of books. Like, I'm pretty sure there's at least five, if I'm not mistaken. And this was written by two authors, Preston B. Nichols and Peter Moon. So it describes in the books, the Montauk Project is allegedly a series of classified experiments on the topic of time travel, among other things, if I'm not mistaken. But I haven't taken the time to read the books.
It's on a lot. Mind control, like, using psychedelics, I think was a big part of it, wasn't it? Like, there's a lot going on with the
Montauk. There was a lot going on, yeah. But yeah, so it's interesting because these authors, Nichols and Moon, have never claim to have fictionalized anything.
Mm.
However, they don't not claim that. So it's kind of like, it's very inconclusive, highly controversial.
So it must be true.
It is listed under the genre of conspiracy.
Right.
So again, right, like, it almost reminds me of the day after Roswell. Remember
yeah.
that was written after that yeah. guy that was, like, supposedly in I think he was in the Department of Defense or something like that.
I get why you're bringing this up, though, too. It's like, it's the breadcrumb trail, right? It's like,
mm-hmm.
if all of these things are just crazy conspiracy theories, but there's maybe one breadcrumb involved in, say, the Montauk Project that happens to be, like, maybe true, then there are these like, lines. It's like the fishing line. You can hardly see it, but it's still there. And it's like, it's reaching out and touching something that might be the Philadelphia Experiment or might be some other weird project that we don't even know about because it never got blown up into this crazy conspiracy theory, you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, the idea of another ship being involved too, like I mentioned it off the top.
Yeah.
Or the Eldridge just being like a misnomer almost. It's like that was something that got latched onto by Jacques Vallée. I mean, again, and it's like everything seems to be connected with this weird story, right? There's all these UFO characters involved. Like Jessup was already doing his thing with UFOs and then gets pulled in by the ONR. You got Jacques Vallée, who was like, you know, hardcore into the UFO research, piping in and having his two cents about it. It wasn't really involving UFOs. It was just a weird military complex story, right? But he describes a procedure aboard the USS Engstrom, E-N-G-S-T-R-O-M, which was allegedly docked alongside the Eldridge in 1943. Is that docked alongside it in New York? Or another misnomer and they're like thinking, oh, the Eldridge is in Philly. I'm not sure.
Interesting.
But it was doing these, it was also involved in experiments with powerful electromagnetic fields on board this ship, doing the degaussing experiments. The system that was actually invented by a Canadian, apparently, a guy named Charles F. Goodeve. What a name. So anyway, yeah, I just thought that was interesting. I mean, he wrote that the procedure on board the USS Engstrom, which was docked alongside the Eldridge in 43, involved a generation of powerful electromagnetics on board. And yeah, I mean, could it have been that ship and not the Eldridge? I mean, they both start with an E. I mean, I don't know.
Engstrom,
like,
Eldridge. Yeah, you're, no, that's not far off, but
it's kind of far off, but again, it's just another wrinkle to the story that's kind of weird. It's like, well, there's a ship that sounds very similar. It was also performing these experiments that definitely are kind of strange for the time.
Now we need to go back and look into the ONR records for this ship.
I know, right? Anyway, I mean, that's kind of winding me down to the end here. And I think we've maybe muddled it more than actually got ourselves towards a final result or explanation.
Pretty sure that's what happens to a lot of people when they start to dive down this little rabbit hole here. Because it is just very bizarre. And there is this whole elaborate entangled weave of different, like, I wouldn't say competing threads of, say, opinion and blurred fact, or you know what I mean, like, again, like, it gets into this whole, it's been lost, not lost, but it's been around for 70 years, this story, and there has been absolutely no evidence to sort of validify or validate, I guess I should say, any of it, but it still continues to fascinate, which is,
I mean, I guess the only thing I would be potentially something that's ongoing that would validate it is the current research into teleportation. You know, that is not necessarily building off Einstein's theory, but, you know, scientists have successfully teleported photons. Right.
Yes.
And that is really interesting.
Okay. And a photon, that is basically what is the most elementary form of light, correct? It's like the smallest particle.
I believe so. I mean,
actually, don't quote me on that.
I don't have that listed right here, like, as that exact description, but you can do a quick search on that if you like. But this
it's it is an elementary particle.
There you go. But this version of teleporting this very, like, small rudimentary particle here isn't exactly how you would expect, right? So it involves this phenomena called entanglement, where essentially it takes three photons to essentially, like, recreate the original photon on the other side. So you're getting a replica. You're not getting a full teleportation.
Interesting. That kind of reminds me of Willy Wonka.
Yeah. Actually, this is from sciencehowstuffworks.com, and this was just a funny little quote here from them. It's like, okay, sorry. So, like, by entangling photons B and C, researchers can extract information from photon A. So, like, photon A is the first, B is the middle, C is the end point.
Okay.
So they're saying here, in other words, when Captain Kirk beams down to an alien planet, an analysis of his atomic structure passes through the transport room to his desired location, where it then builds a Kirk replica. Meanwhile, the original Kirk dematerializes.
Weird.
So it's almost like the original ceases to exist the way it did. And now it moves on as the original would, but the original is no longer. It's not a straight teleportation.
That's weird.
So it's almost, if that's true, and if the Philadelphia experiment happened, then what happened was, and that's, like, I guess why the men refused to the ship.
Didn't quite happen correctly.
No, it's like, and it wasn't the same ship. The Eldridge dematerializes, is re-put together in Norfolk, dematerializes again, and rematerializes as a third new ship back again. Not its original ship, and not the ship that dematerialized in Norfolk, but a third ship. And somewhere along that weird line is where, like, men are lost in time. People are down a rabbit hole, down an interdimensional portal, and end up in some other universe or whatever, right? fuse to the ship, the ones that actually do stay on board or whatever. Hmm. So anyway, that's bizarre. But it's ongoing research. And like you kind of alluded to, maybe we'll have some invisibility cloaks like sooner than we think. And if this is research that's currently happening, is it that far-fetched to think that there would have been some really, really like this big swinging moves to try to like obtain this technology back in the day,
mm-hmm.
to take over the world, essentially? I mean, definitely the Germans would have been doing hand, that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I'm at on this. That's sort of my final statement on the Philadelphia experiment.
Well, that is a big mouthful. Yeah, I'm not even sure where I'm landing with this. I think it's a very fascinating legend, and I think it will continue to persevere in the popular imaginations of our society forward. And yeah, it's just a lot of fun. I love it. It's very ambiguous. I don't know who to believe. I definitely don't see Alan as obviously like anyone listening can probably tell. I don't think he's the most reliable person at all or the most qualified person to be making the statements that he was making. But it was like, was he fed stuff or was he just making it up?
I think
he did claim to have made it all up.
And then recanted that later on.
Mm-hmm.
It's all so weird, man. This is the time where we need you guys to pipe in.
Yeah, we definitely want to know what you guys think about all this. And you can hit us up with an email. We always love to hear from you guys. We'll be posting on our Facebook group, too. You can go and follow us over there if you haven't already.
Yeah, so Into the Portal Podcast on Facebook, Into the Portal Podcast on Instagram. Mm-hmm. You can send us an email at intotheportalmailbox@gmail.com. Come follow us on Twitter at intotheportal1, the number one. And follow the network as well at Strange Pods on Instagram, Strange Podcasts on Twitter. And the website is still down for the network, but it should be back up relatively soon. That's straightupstrange.com. And of course, you can always check out the archive and everything we've done on ITP at intotheportal.com. Do not forget to please leave us that 5-star rating and a review if you're enjoying the show. It really helps us defeat the algorithm and keep Into the Portal growing. And thank you again to all of our Patreon supporters, our new producer Jackson, all of our producers, Adam Kellums, Nightwing, Kitsune,
and our latest paranormal scholar in need.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us, and everyone over there is so awesome. If you haven't checked us out, click the link below in the show notes. You can look at Patreon and all of our other links. And we can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about the Philadelphia Experiment Part 2. And until next time, on Into the Portal.
Your gateway to the bizarre.
This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.